He was a congressman from the great state of Virginia, the 5th congressional district. He was on the January 6th committee, but it goes deeper than that. The man served in the military, a former Air Force officer and National Security Agency contractor, so he understands all sides of how government works. And in the end, he pulled the pin. He couldn't take it to being a Republican anymore. He's going to be speaking at the Democratic convention this weekend, but that isn't because he joined the Democratic Party. He's an independent. He's somebody who believes that America needs more independence, and I want to visit with him. So former Congressman Denver Riggleman is with us right now. I'll say Congressman, and then you'll get mad at me, so let me just start with Denver. Denver, good to have you on News and Views.
Hey, I love it. No, please call me Denver. My congressional days are over, so I'm all good.
But you earned that title, sir, and it's something I have no doubt during this interview will slip out. Let me ask you this. What was the final straw that made you leave the Republican Party?
Well, actually, it started pretty early. You know, really, the beginning of the end, which ended up being the final straw, was the same-sex wedding that I officiated in July of 2019. And, you know, I'd just been elected, and it wasn't 2 days after that, you know, when I first learned of QAnon, because I was called Tool of the Antichrist. And I actually think that started the long slide, you know, towards the end. But I think in the spring of 2020, you know, as I was getting, because my background, you mentioned military, was counterterrorism. I was also fighting radicalization, right? I was all over the globe doing that in the Air Force, but also when I worked for the National Security Agency. So I think when Donald Trump was retweeting QAnon conspiracies that President Obama and then Vice President Biden killed SEAL Team 6, and that we had killed a body double for Osama bin Laden. I think at that point, I'm like, we have gone so far down the rabbit hole that I need to say something. And that's when really I started my confrontational war against crazy in the GOP.
Well, it found its way onto that January 6th committee, the honesty. I followed it. I saw it, you know, and I saw the tough questions that were asked by the Liz Cheneys and by yourself that weren't just going to sit there and ignore this and be partisan throughout it. That had to be a tough time to go back to. You call it conference now, I call it caucus, but that had to be a tough time to be a Republican, and the pressure must have been on you there.
Well, you know, I think I broke the record for death threats, Joel. You know, it was pretty incredible to see what was coming at me at the time. However, you get to a point, you're almost numb to it, because it's the people, you know, that are quiet that you worry about, not really the idiots that are screaming, you know, whether it's on email or phone calls or, you know, on social media. But yeah, it was quite the challenge. The thing is, you know, there was about a 1,000-page report for the January 6th committee. It could be 3,000 pages, you know, the whole command and control infrastructure was just so huge, it was hard to define a report. There's still so much that could be gleaned from the data that we found during the January 6th investigation. I think you could do multiple tomes on how that organized sort of coup-like attempt, that slow-rolling coup-like attempt, was actually executed, you know, over that time. So it's really it's an amazing thing to be a part of. And to be in Congress at that time in history, to actually be the only Republican to speak on the floor against QAnon, and then to be part of the January 6th committee, I got to tell you, it was quite a ride. It was quite bumpy.
I don't doubt that. I mean, you're a man that of beliefs, certain things that have guided you through your life. One of those is conservative principles. You know, I read about you this morning and yesterday, and clearly you're a conservative by your very nature. You know, when I served in the state Senate here in North Dakota, I respected and worked with people with pure conservative principles and their vision of how government should work. Somewhere along the way, your old party got away from that. And I'm trying to figure out how people like you lost. And is it all because of one man?
Yeah, I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, you know, even though, you know, I always thought the conservative principles, I thought I could be the new Republican, which, you know, what hubris I must have had, right? When, you know, because I was for marriage equality. But, you know, even I got elected, you know, during a blue wave, which was really incredible, right, as somebody who had never been in politics. And I think the fact that I got elected when people even knew I was for marriage equality and legalization of marijuana, I thought that gave me some kind of, you know, mandate where I could say, hey, I'm the new Republican. Conservative principles are live and let live, right? Conservative principles should be, you know, freedom of thought, right? Freedom of religion. We shouldn't care what people think about, but that, what a hellaciously bad mistake that was for me. And I don't even know what that, you know, as far as conservative in the GOP today, it's really Trump's party. There is really no real center right, sort of more moderate, you know, people left, that they're just gone. You know, even with Gallagher leaving, you know, I know everybody who's left and other people lost. I think I was the only one who tried to stick it out and actually fought to the end because I was so freaking angry, to be honest with you, Joel. So, but yeah, I just don't know what it means anymore in this current instantiation of the Republican Party. That's why I'm no longer Republican. And to be honest, my views have really moderated as I got away from that and started seeing at what they were really trying to do and the sort of Christian nationalism bent to the GOP. I started seeing that maybe I didn't even believe what I really believed, the way I was raised very religiously, things like that. I'm not really religious anymore. And you know, I just started to moderate, and I think as I've gotten older, I've moderated, you know, especially over the past 6 to 7 years.
See, but Congressman, that's what drives me nuts about what happened to people like you, that this country needs. Pure conservative principles to me always were government, stay out of my life. Do what you have to do to make sure the country works, but stay out of my life. Well, marriage equality is that. It's staying out of people's life. That, to me, is a conservative principle. When you look at and you bring that argument to the man at their VFW hall, to those people who are wearing the red hats, they don't have an answer for it. They really don't, other than the fact that they hate people that are gay. And so to be to a point where your principles are to hate people and to pick on people in minority, I just, that goes away from the party of Ronald Reagan, in my opinion.
Man, that's a great point. Honestly, a great point. You know, when I officiated the wedding, you know, I wanted to actually cover all my bases. So I made sure it was also an interracial gay wedding, Joel. So I wanted to make sure that I covered all my bases, because what happened, I'm saying it sort of glibly, is it wasn't really the wedding. It really affected people. They thought that I had somehow was being funded by George Soros. And that's what I always called the tool of the Antichrist, was after I did that wedding. But what really made people angry is I married a white man to a black man. That was really a touch point of crazy in the southern part of my district. And it got to the point that, you know, I became very confrontational. And I think that was part of my issue. And I learned, it really humbled me that, you know, you have to be congressional. I always thought that there was a certain way you had to carry yourself, you had to be respectful. You had to actually hold your ideals to the office, because it's so important to be a representative of the United States government. But it got to the point I was attacked so much in such a violent way with such violent language. And me being former military, a former bouncer, you know, I was a two-time state powerlifting champion. Like, I started to get confrontational during meetings. And I think that's just a huge issue, right? Is that you're right. I mean, the point is, what are we? I mean, if I can't even perform a wedding for people who love each other, if I can't, you know, if I can't vote to keep pre-existing health conditions, which I did, and that really got sideways, you know, by that time I'm being called in the pejorative a secret Jew. And that was called the worst thing you could ever be called in the Republican Party. I was called a secret Democrat. And then, you know, so that's when I knew that, you know, things had gone sideways. And I actually pushed back and said, hey, if being a Democrat means protecting democratic institutions and actually allowing people to do what they want to do in America, then hell, you know, call me what you want. I'm cool with it.
So let me ask you this, as somebody who was on the committee that actually had the courage to look at the insurrection and actually looked at the threat that was to our country. In North Dakota here right now, we have two Republicans fighting for governor that are their ads, if you counted the word Trump that they say in it, it's like they're competing to see if I said it 8 times or you said it 7 times. They're blind, you know, I love this man. I'll do anything for this man. I liked him first. No, you liked him first. You know, it's that type of a campaign. So I'm going to ask you this, and it's not going to be a question about what you think. It's going to be a question about what you know, having served on that committee. Is Donald Trump a liar?
Oh, I think, yeah, he's a pathological liar. And, you know, when you're dealing with a narcissist or somebody who might be identified as a sociopath, and somebody who's eager to spread conspiracy theories and eager to push violence and language and eager to foment radicalization, you got a person who's also eager, right, to push any type of narrative that he can to be reelected. And that is what's so dangerous to our democratic institutions. So if you have two people belly crawling to Mar-a-Lago, right, it's not about their belief systems. It's not about what's best for the constituents. You have two people, right, that would actually, you know, kiss the boots of Trump in order to be elected. And that should scare people. If you have somebody scrambling, or you have two candidates scrambling to see who best, right, can be a toady to a sort of a, you know, a lying authoritarian bent, you know, idiot, I think that's the issue that we have. And I think that's what needs to be called out. I know that's difficult in your state. I know it is. I can't wait to get there. But I think that on some levels, it's okay to be confrontational with individuals who only care about who they're satisfying as far as an individual rather than the constituents of their districts.
Former Congressman Denver Riggleman will be at the Dem NPL convention as that independent, speaking to the group, which I'm going to enjoy. I'm going to moderate that panel and get a chance to ask him similar questions to what we're doing right now. Congressman, I'm not a big believer in polls anymore. We saw that red wave not happen in the last election that everybody predicted and the polls showed and those type of things. So I'm not as married to polling as what I was earlier in my political career. But now nothing matters before the word but it matters when it comes to money. It really does. And when you look at this race that's happening now on a national scale between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, you know, Liz Cheney goes to Wisconsin and packs the house. Now, I read a lot about what you said about Liz Cheney and the patriot that you pointed out she was throughout this whole process. Does that signify more information, more data than what any poll would?
Another great question. I'm going to humbly submit to you that it really doesn't make a difference. You know, when you look at the swing states, look at the electoral vote, and you look at the popular vote, really, what was it? And I'm trying to remember the exact number, and you might have it at the tip of your, you know, at the tip of your brain, but I think it's 80,000 votes separated, you know, Joe Biden and Donald Trump in the last election based on the electoral vote. So what you're looking at is the swing districts and the swing counties. And I know money is very important. We look at the people that are already absolutely in the tank for Trump. Money has no bearing on actually how they go one way or the other. You might be able to maybe swing 1-3% of that base, maybe, you know, and I still think that's a high number. So I think what you have to concentrate on is voter turnout, almost this inclusive voter turnout that really appeals to independents and center-right Republicans, people that are definitely never Trump. And it's okay to use that now. People shouldn't have any issues with that. If you're never Trump, it means you're pro-democracy. You're pro-democratic institutions. So I really think it's those specific swing districts and those swing counties. We have to put all your resources, just rock and roll, you know, right in there. So I don't think Liz going to Wisconsin, I don't think it's great. I think we have to have those voices out there, but we're trying to reach that sliver. Maybe it's 3-5% of people that are right on the edge, right, to turn them over so that they're voting against Donald Trump and they're voting for pro-democratic institutions, which is embodied, I think, right now in President Biden.
This is where you're going to tell me it's none of your business, but I'm really curious about this. How many of those Republicans that have left office, how many Paul Ryans of the world have reached out to you and thanked you for having the courage to say what you're saying now?
Well, I mean, they really, a lot of them can't. Because if it got out that they're saying great job, Denver, but you know, me and Adam Kinzinger are very close. He's actually on my advisory board for my new AI and analysis company, my counterterrorism company. So, you know, we're very close. I definitely have people thanking me. The thing is, I don't have officials thanking me. I have people thanking me, airports everywhere, especially after the 60 Minutes, you know, segment that I was on where I was featured. And with the book, you know, I did write The Breach and that became a bestseller. And I thought actually that was the end of me. I thought that was the end of my political career, my technical career. You know, I was just going to go back in the woods and make whiskey because that's what our family does. So, you know, because we from distilleries, right? Our family makes whiskey. You know, You know, my whole life really is fast cars, cigars, whiskey, and freedom, right? And so, but yeah, so that's really what it comes down to is that everybody that I meet on the street, people who know me are like, thank you for at least having some guts and telling the truth and having integrity. And I've even had people come up. I got to tell you, people that have identified as far left have come up to me and said, Denver, I want to tell you when you were in, you know, I didn't support any of your, you know, policies. I'm like, oh, okay. I said, but man, what I do support is you're a truth teller and, you know, you care about America. And you know, that's huge for me. You know, when I stand up on the stage, you know, I'm an independent, but I've moderated and I feel like I'm, gosh, not actually identifying with R or D has allowed me to say things I think that I can get away with that other people can't. And I just don't think I'll ever go back to a tribe. However, I feel like the Democratic Party is much bigger and much more willing to accept somebody like me than the GOP now. And I think that's what's interesting about this, is that the Democratic Party might have more room for moderates, you know, and that's, wow, you know, that should be an eye opener. And I think that's why I'm excited to speak, you know, this weekend.
Yeah. And I'm excited to meet you in person and to ask you more questions about your family's whiskey as well. So Congressman, always, you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And I look forward and welcome to North Dakota, and we'll see you this weekend.
Yeah, and it was an honor to be on your show, and really thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.